You're listening to another episode of Our Delaware Valley. I'm your host, Marcus Goldman, and with me today is a friend who's been on the show many times, Rob Reichert. He is the director of the AIDS Fund here in Philadelphia, and he's with Luis Montaner, who is a professor for the Wistar Institute and director of the Beat HIV Group.
Correct.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming on to talk about HIV and AIDS today, because there have been some recent breakthroughs that we need to share with people, because not only will they help people in the HIV world, but there's potential for this to spread elsewhere in the medical world. Could we get a background on yourselves, what you do for the AIDS Fund, what you do for the Wistar Institute, and how you got involved with the AIDS research?
I'm Rob Reichert. I'm the executive director of AIDS Fund, and our mission is to raise awareness about HIV and AIDS, particularly here in the Delaware Valley. And we provide small emergency grants to people living with HIV that are designed to keep them in care. So housing assistance, utility assistance, sometimes, you know, 2 weeks ago I delivered a hospital bed to somebody. Those kinds of things that keep people in care, because that's our goal today, is get people in care and keep them in care. And so we offer these small emergency grants that average just $400 to help stabilize people so that they can remain in care.
And changing your mission over the last few years has paid off very differently, but very successfully for the AIDS Fund, correct?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we looked at a few years ago kind of where we were today in the epidemic and how we were responding and, you know, how could we have the greatest impact on people living with HIV and keeping them in care? And we realized that the way to do that is fill a gap that nobody else was doing by providing these small emergency grants to keep people in their housing, keep their utilities on. Sometimes we've gotten refrigerators for people to keep their medicines in. Those things that actually are really incredibly important for keeping somebody in care. It's really hard to be in care. We have some organizations who have been successful in keeping homeless people in care, but it's really hard when you're homeless to maintain the treatment regimens that are necessary to live a long and healthy life with HIV.
And you said that the average grant is about $400, which seems fairly low because of the exorbitant cost of medical and health care these days.
Right. We're not trying to cover those costs because, you know, there are the other programs. And what we're trying to do is those other things. Somebody who is housing insecure, they're about to lose their housing. They're about to lose their utilities. Again, it's really hard to maintain your health if you're living on the street.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having us here to share some of our information with you today. I'm Luis Montaner. I'm a professor at the Wistar Institute. I've been in Philadelphia researching HIV for over 23 years with multiple partners in our community that make this work possible. University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia Fight, multiple groups around the city that contribute to our work. And through this trajectory, we've advanced our work to now be focused around cure-directed research. So we have coalesced a lot of what we've learned together with a worldwide effort, and we, Philadelphia, is one of the centers for HIV cure-directed research in the United States. We've received one of six large coalition awards that put together a lot of individuals both nationally and internationally to come together, bring their expertise, bring their ideas, and there are two clinical studies that we're about to open this year in Philadelphia that are cure-directed in nature and will help us advance a potential cure into the future.
Do you want to give the website and social media information as well as the phone number for the Wistar Institute so people can get information as they need it?
Thank you. The HIV program is fully described on their website, beathiv.org. That's beat-hiv.org. And if you go to this website, you will find a full description of our program and some contact information, links for the community, and so forth. Otherwise, you can always contact the Wistar Institute at 215-898-3700.
Rob, do you want to give out the social media information as well as the website address and the phone number for the AIDS Fund?
We're at AIDSFundPhilly.org, AIDSFUNDPHILLY.org. Our phone number is 215-731-WALK. The other number I really want to give out today, though, is the AIDS hotline number, which is 215-985-AIDS. And people who are listening can go there to get information on how to get HIV and AIDS services, where the closest spot to get testing is in their neighborhood. And so that's a really critical number for people to kind of know and memorize 215-985-AIDS.
And if I'm not mistaken, the testing is both free and anonymous.
Free and confidential.
Confidential.
Okay. Free and confidential.
Recently in the news, the media had talked about a story developing over in Europe based on a study, if I'm not mistaken, where they're using bone marrow to cure AIDS, or at least they're using it in research to test to see if they are able to cure AIDS with it. I don't know how to word that properly because I'm not exactly sure where they are. And part of one of the many reasons that both Rob and Luis are on the show today is to talk about this, because it's a big breakthrough in medicine. And not only could it help people with HIV and AIDS, but it could spread across the medical board.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. It's an exciting time at the moment for the HIV cure directed research. There's a lot of advancements in many different fronts. And one that was really captivating in the imagination of everyone in the media and elsewhere is the case of a London patient who, due to his cancer diagnosis, received a bone marrow transplant that was obtained from an individual that had a missing gene that is required for the virus to infect cells. So when this person in London received this bone marrow transplant as a component of his treatment, the cells he was receiving were somewhat deficient in this molecule, and therefore the virus couldn't infect it. And as a consequence, that immune system was able to persist in the absence of HIV replication thereafter. This particular turnover of your immune system when you get new cells from someone else that doesn't have this receptor has actually been observed before. There was another gentleman earlier on, referred to as the Berlin patient many years ago, who had a similar strategy, and to this day he remains HIV free. And this individual in Berlin several years ago was actually the first case that we all recognized was indeed what we would all be comfortable in calling it a cure. Now, in the context of cure-directed research, there is the expectation that when you stop someone's antiretroviral therapy, you will then observe this person to determine whether the virus is going to return or not. Unfortunately, a lot of our laboratory measures don't give us an accurate reflection of whether the virus is going to return or not. So a lot of our studies include a component that interrupts the antiretroviral therapy they're on, just like this individual in London. So now that this person has been off therapy and has been, over an extended period, more than 18 months, being without detectable viral replication, we start talking about the potential that this person may be cured.
But right. The fact that they are not cured now means that the disease is in more of a remissive state, correct?
I think it's adequate to call it a long-term remission until we have a longer period of observation, because we also know that all of our strategies in the context of someone that is receiving treatment may indeed reduce the amount of virus, but not eradicate it. And we also know that the virus may take a slow step forward in coming back. So the question is, have we reduced it beyond that threshold that it's not going to come back? Or is it going to come back later on? And I think that that's why this particular team waited 18 months before telling anyone that this person was in long-term remission, because that is beyond what all the other strategies have been able to achieve. However, it's not as long as what the current Berlin patient have been with no HIV. So I think that 18 months, we can call it a long-term remission and hope that this person is indeed cured. But I think you will have to wait maybe about 3 years and then start to call it a second cure.
Similar to like what they do with cancer, as far as the long-term remission becomes a cure at like 5 years or
correct.
Something along
correct.
Those lines.
So in the meantime,
mistaken.
These individuals are being monitored and they're being followed very closely. And importantly, there's other cancer-treated persons that have also received a similar strategy and they're under current antiretroviral therapy. And there's at least one other that has interrupted therapy but has not been followed very long. Mm-hmm. And there was even news of a third person that potentially had a cure outcome. This was this third person I'm talking about, but the follow-up is actually pretty short. So I don't know that the teams would even call it long-term remission yet. They would just call it, we're just observing to see what happens.
So far successful, and we'll see where we go down
that's
the
right.
road.
That's
but
right.
I think it's really important to point out that these are steps along a long-term process, because what happens in popular media is we start throwing around these terms and we start throwing around the word cure around HIV. Dr. Moderman will say we're a long way from that. Okay, we're making steps along a process. But I think that it's dangerous when we start to put it out there that, oh, here's a person who's been cured. We're talking about one person in 32, 36 million people worldwide who are living with HIV right now, and with a very unique set of circumstances that give us a point of learning about how HIV may be able to be controlled down the line, but or cured down the line. But I think what happens is we seize upon this, where, and part of it is that we so badly and desperately want a cure.
Oh, of course.
Okay, that we seize upon this, and the general public doesn't always understand the context. So they hear cure and HIV, and it makes my job harder to kind of serve the people who are out there living with HIV because they don't understand. All they hear is, oh, HIV and cure, you know, and they move on because that's the way the media works today. Mm-hmm. And so that's my one concern.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to second that. I think that there is a lot of misrepresentation about what's actually happening in the field of research right now. What is actually happening is that we have a couple of outcomes that teach us what we need to be trying to go after as far as targets in the body that will give us a good outcome, but not that the strategy that they have undertaken is a therapy that we can offer. Because we have to remember, they had cancer. They had no other choice but this therapy, and this therapy carries lethal outcomes, meaning you can die of a bone marrow transplant. You don't die of taking your antiretroviral therapy. So it is because they had no other choice that this becomes available. It is not a cure strategy for a person that is healthy, a person that has a diagnosis of HIV and can go on antiretroviral therapy. No one would advise what they did in the absence of having no other option.
And it's even, if I understand correctly, finding the person who is a match for the bone marrow and has this one particular genetic thing. So there's not a lot of...
No, that's right. And so now let's take an imaginary role that this was actually something that you could even consider, which is not. Mm-hmm. Then you have a separate barrier, which is that you need to find a match, just like when you go on a bone marrow transplant, on a liver or heart or lung transplant list. There are people that are waiting a long time because they don't have a match. You would have to find a match, and then third, after you find the match, you have to find somebody that doesn't have the gene that HIV needs, which is also a frequency that's very low. So you have three steps that you have to go through. You have to accept the fact that the first treatment is not lethal, which it is. You have to find a match, which is very rare, and you have to find the match that lacks the gene that HIV needs, which is also rare.
So it becomes exponentially rare with each step that you go
down. That's right. However, somebody said to me once, you only need to hear a dog speak once to know that it is possible. And what we've learned from these cases is that it is possible to get rid of HIV if we target this particular molecule that the gene was lacking in these people produces. So now there's a lot of new initiatives in funding for gene therapy to try to get rid of this gene. One of the trials that we're about to open in Philadelphia is trying to mimic what's happening in this particular case. So there are other ways we can gain from this information in guiding us how to move our research effort to try to learn the most we can in reproducing what happened in these two people.
Again, I appreciate you clarifying the difference between the remissive state and a cure, because I think we need to know that. It's exciting when we have these breakthroughs. And I know recently there was that Israeli team who was announcing how they had that cure for cancer, and then they had to raise money to make it happen, and then it turned out that they were frauds. So I like the way that you're handling this, because it's realistic, it's honest, and it's the right way to handle it, due to the fact that moving forward, like Rob also pointed out, using improper terminology can make your job more difficult, and it can make things more difficult for the researchers.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, these two studies that are about to open, we have a long process of education for anyone that's interested to be participating in it, because we want to be absolutely transparent that we're trying to move the information forward. And there's other people that move the information forward in the past, and that's why we have the current therapies that we do. So this whole culture of stepping forward and gaining information is something that people living with HIV have been doing for a long time. But I think that in this particular case, where we're talking about cure-directed research, we have to be really, really careful to inform people that you're part of the process. And we all hope, obviously, that we're going to get there. That's why we're doing it.
Oh, absolutely.
But at the same time, we want to make sure that anyone participating in a study knows knows that they're part of a path towards that, that it's not like we have at this time anything that we can offer that could say you're going to be cured. But without the studies, we'll never get there.
It's fascinating how these studies have come about and how through the research they've been able to find out, let's try the bone marrow, let's try, you know, gene therapy, let's try stem cell therapy. So, I mean, there's all these different ways of using our body to help us
absolutely
heal.
And
it's an advancement and in modern medicine.
You almost sound like a plant, because the we have two studies about to open this year that actually are exactly what you're talking about. Because one study is trying to use components of our immune system, of our own natural response, that we're going to overdose, if you like, in a person to try to make that person supercharged to control the virus on their own, using their own system, their own responses. But
wow.
But with these medications that we know can boost their resistance level to a much higher level than anyone naturally can achieve without being unsafe, at least in the studies that have been carried on to date. But what's exciting is that we're combining them together for the first time. Ooh. Like, they've been analyzed individually, but never in together in one person at the same time.
Wow.
So we're very excited about that. The FDA approved, I think, what is the first combination approach against HIV using these agents. The second study that we're about to open is a gene therapy approach, where we're actually taking the cells from someone directly and then actually genetically programming their cells to now have features that they can never acquire naturally. The ability to kill HIV-infected cells, and also taking away that same molecule that these people in London lacked, you know, the patient in London lacked.
Yeah.
So that they cannot be reinfected again. And then putting it back in a person and asking, if I give you a cell that doesn't have the receptor to be infected and can actually find and kill HIV-infected cells like you naturally cannot do, is that going to give us a better outcome? And both of these questions, the one about boosting or the one about killing, are questions we don't know the answer to. So is it going to work? I don't know. But if we don't do it, and if we don't stop therapy on someone and follow closely, we'll never find out.
These studies, how long do they take place? Like, if you do a study like this, how long are you doing it for?
For about at least 9 months. Because, like, for example, a lot of these studies require someone to be carefully evaluated even before you start the strategy. Because you want to know, how much virus can I measure in someone that is taking therapy? How stable is it if I measure a couple of times? Mm-hmm. Can I get blood and measure the amount of the blood? Can I take tissue and do a biopsy and see how much virus they have in their body even before I start? Because then I'll know after I do a strategy and I do those measurements at the end whether anything has changed, right? Mm-hmm. And then I do my strategy and I follow them and then I stop therapy and then I observe what happens when I stop therapy. And we just talked about the fact that this case is only in the news because it's been 18 months after they stopped therapy. Now, most strategies we expect, if they don't work, the virus will be back within 2 months.
Okay.
But then the question is, when you ask me how long is it going to take, my hope is that it's going to take multiple years. Yeah. Because it's going to work.
I know, Rob, when I've had you on in the previous years, we've also talked about some of the medication they have now that stops the spread of HIV, that allows people to carry on normal, healthy lives and not worry about either the stereotypes of spreading it or spreading it. And those have been some big advancements we've discussed. Sure. Does that work in conjunction with any of this new gene therapy and any of the new type of therapy that we're seeing pop up?
Well, you know, I think it's important that what we have today are very effective treatments to reduce the amount of virus in somebody's system if they have the ability to access them and maintain their taking them. We call that combination therapy, where they take drugs. And all of this comes out of the research from 20 years ago. And what's really important for people to know and understand is that we know that if somebody is successful on treatment today, they will not pass the virus on to somebody else. In 20 plus years, the combination therapy has been out there. There is not one documented case.
That's zero.
Zero documented cases of somebody who is successful in treatment, has an undetectable viral load, passing the virus on to somebody else. Not one. And we need to make sure that message gets out to people, that we can help people to live a long and healthy life with HIV by getting them on treatment and keeping them on treatment. But we can also slow the spread of the epidemic by getting them on treatment and keeping them on treatment. This is why we evolved our mission. The other thing that I think is really important today for people to know about is PrEP, where somebody takes one of the same medicines that somebody with HIV takes, but it keeps them from contracting the virus. Because the virus, when they are exposed to the virus, they already have this drug in their system that keeps the virus from replicating. So if they take that and they take it consistently and regularly, they will greatly reduce their risk of contracting the virus. In fact, I think there's only been 3 documented cases of somebody who's on PrEP seroconverting or becoming HIV positive. 2 of the 3, I believe, were people they believe were already HIV positive when they started PrEP. And the 3rd person contracted a resistant strain of the virus. Because the person they contracted it from was somebody who was inconsistently using their medicines.
So it mutated the virus?
Right. And so they had a resistant strain. But, you know, I want to be really clear, and I think that it is really important when we have, again, what happens is we seize upon the 3 people who are on PrEP who then became HIV positive, and not the tens or hundreds of thousands who are on it and have it. And I think that's where sometimes these 1 or 2 cases attract the media attention, and they don't kind of get the nuances. And that's why I was so excited when you contacted us about, you know, the show today. Is like, I think it's important for people to understand the nuances of the research, and that doesn't get into this 30-second soundbite.
It also goes across the board medically when we see these with cancer, with MS, with alcoholism, with opioid addiction. No matter what, we get these little bright spots of hope and we want to run with it to the extreme level, which, yes, it's great and someday we'll get there, but at this point we're not there yet, so we just have to basically trudge forward and keep plowing away to get it done.
I agree. I think the take-home message is if you are having unprotected sex or exposing yourself in any way, you need to be on PrEP, period. You need to get access, you need to talk to your provider, you need to talk to your doctor, you need to see how you can get on PrEP, because it's been proven that will save your life. Second, if you are HIV infected and you know that you're infected, you need to be on antiretroviral therapy, because that will extend your life and you won't infect anyone else. And if you are interested in the stories that we're hearing about, like the London patient, all these, then find out about how you can get engaged in research studies, because that's the only way that you can participate in this process. By not getting on therapy is not by waiting for the cure. If you're HIV infected and you're not in a study, you need to be on antiretroviral therapy. If you want to be part of the process, then get engaged. Find out from your community-based organizations, Philadelphia Fight, the Westar Institute, University of Pennsylvania. There's multiple opportunities. Philadelphia is one of the richest places in the U.S. that has research studies to offer. Many places don't. We do. So get engaged. But if you're not on a study, get yourself on therapy. And if you're not HIV infected and having unprotected sex, get yourself on PrEP.
Do you also recommend the PrEP for people who are intravenous drug users?
Anyone.
Okay.
Anyone.
Because
anyone that is having unprotected sex, heterosexual, homosexual, yes. It doesn't matter.
But I'm talking, I mean, I know that like some of the diseases are also passed through the blood of the needles.
Right.
And that's why I asked about the needles, because we also have a very ferocious heroin and opioid problem in Philadelphia.
PrEP is all,
aware.
PrEP can be used for people who are active in their addictions and using intravenous drugs. I think the studies have shown it's not been quite as effective there as it has been sexually, but there's other issues that impact that.
The drugs, the heroin and things like
that. Well, yes, because your body's already, you know, they have a terrible impact on the immune system. Also, you know, there's an adherence issue.
And
also
adherence, the fact they don't take it.
Right. And also that, you know, let's get to my third grade science, but when you are literally injecting the blood into your bloodstream directly, you know, HIV has a much greater chance of taking hold. So those things all impact that. But yes, somebody who is active in their addiction and using intravenous drugs, you know, they should talk to a medical provider about PrEP.
You know, Philadelphia has a really important role to play in this whole question of how do we control people from getting infected, in addition to how do we get the research to move forward. Because the research to move forward is a handful of less than 100 people that are going to participate in highly select studies. But that doesn't represent the entire community that's living with HIV. So we need to deal with how do we stop new infections? How do we get people on therapy that are infected today? And you may have heard President Trump's statement in the State of the Union address saying that one of the directives was to stop HIV infections. And that actually relates to the fact that the government did a study where they analyzed how many counties in the U.S. out of 307, I believe, were responsible for more than 50% of new infections. And Philadelphia was one of the 48. So the whole national agenda now is to target these 48 counties to try to see whether if by providing greater community access to testing and getting people on therapy, getting people on PrEP, getting people to use condoms, can those strategies as public health measures reduce the infection in these 48 hotspots of which Philadelphia is one of them, and as a consequence have a magnifying effect on reducing infections within the U.S. as a whole. So this message matters, and I think if you're listening to this and it applies to you, then take action, because it's going to have consequences.
Again with me are Rob Reichert, who is the director of the AIDS Fund here in Philadelphia, as well as Luis Montaner, who is a professor at the Wistar Institute and director of the BeatHIV.org group, and they've been here to talk about the importance of us becoming aware and knowing what's going on in regards to HIV and all the news and the hypes and the great medical advancements they've made. Gentlemen, do you want to give out your websites, your phone numbers, your social media information so that people can get more information if there's somebody who would like to possibly participate in one of these studies or get more information about it? Let's get all that information out there.
Well, you can reach AIDS Fund at AIDSFundPhilly.org. Also on all social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, we're at AIDSFundPhilly.org. And our number is 215-731-WALK. But the other number I want to be sure people know is 215-985-AIDS, 215-985-AIDS. I mean, that's where you can find out about getting testing in your community, getting access to medical care, all of those things. Any questions you have about HIV, getting treatment or care, you can get at 985-AIDS.
So you can find out about how to get engaged in HIV research locally within our community by looking at the website beathiv.org. That's BEAT-HIV.org. And the telephone number that gets you to the Wistar Institute is 215-898-3700. That's 215-898-3700. And when you call, just ask for the HIV Cure program and that you're interested in HIV Cure research, and you will be forwarded to our office.
And before we wrap it up, gentlemen, any closing words?
Well, I think we continue to make progress in both the treatment of HIV and how we can prevent the spread of HIV. We know a lot of information. A lot of that's based on the past research. And we are making progress in the research area. But don't mistake that for there being a cure. This epidemic's not over. There's over 30,000 people living in this region with HIV, 1.1 million people living in the country, and 36 million living worldwide with HIV. So we're a long way from ending the epidemic, but we are making steps in that process.
The closing comment would be one of hope. I think that we're really excited about the direction that we're taking. We are hopeful that the investment that the community and the whole living with HIV community have made towards where we are today really gives us hope that we will get an answer for a cure soon. And by soon, I hope within my lifetime. I certainly expect that, and that's why I go to work every day. But as already stated, I think that from a larger point of view, everyone needs to know that we know how to stop HIV epidemic if we got everyone that is infected on therapy, so that we can talk about vaccines, we can talk about the cure, but if while we work on it, if people that listen to this can get people to get tested and on therapy, they will have the same impact in saving lives as we are trying to do in actually doing studies that will do the same. So there is a lot to do for everyone, not just for those of us in the laboratory. There is actually something everyone can do to stop the ravage of HIV within our communities, and it's something powerful. You just get someone tested, and if you get one person treated, you've actually prevented multiple infections from occurring into the future.
That's the truth. And thank you for sharing that information, gentlemen. And again, thank you very much for coming by to talk about a subject that needs to be discussed. Thank you again, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And that wraps up another episode of Our Delaware Valley. I'm your host, Marcus Goldman. If you would like more information about the AIDS Fund, the Wistar Institute, or anything HIV AIDS Fund or Our Delaware Valley related, all you have to do is email me, marcus.goldman@bbgi.com. We invite you to listen to a new episode of Our Delaware Valley next week. Thank you again for listening. Enjoy your Sunday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.